A potential coronavirus vaccine goes into production in the UK, but we won't know if it works until September. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Leisha Santarelli. Good morning. Governments around the world have pledged billions of dollars to find a vaccine for COVID-19. The British drug company AstraZeneca says it's made significant progress and is now able to double the supply of its potential vaccine to 2 billion doses. But as the BBC's Elizabeth Hodson reports, it will be a huge challenge to manufacture and distribute around the world.
The British drug giant AstraZeneca is already running trials of a potential coronavirus vaccine. It's agreed to several new partnerships, including one with the Serum Institute of India, the world's largest manufacturer of vaccines by volume, and two health organisations backed by Bill Gates.
The goal is to raise the full $7.4 billion, and even every pound, dollar, euro we get in addition to that means we can save more lives.
The announcement was made at a global vaccination conference being hosted by the UK, where almost $7 billion was raised to help inoculate children around the world against polio, measles and other diseases. AstraZeneca has agreed to supply half of the doses of its potential coronavirus vaccine to low- and middle-income countries. In London, I'm the BBC's Elizabeth Hodson for Marketplace.
Let's check the financial markets. Brent crude rose above $40 a barrel on speculation the OPEC Plus oil cartel will extend its record production cuts to support prices at their meeting tomorrow. The euro currency and Italian bonds rallied following the European Central Bank's decision yesterday to boost its emergency bond buying program by $675 billion. And that fresh stimulus measures have boosted investor confidence. Asian stocks capped a second straight week of gains, with South Korea and Hong Kong benchmarks rising by more than 1.5%. Starting today, new U.S. trade restrictions come into effect targeting 33 Chinese technology firms and institutions. The U.S. Commerce Department has accused 9 entities of being complicit in what it describes as China's campaign of repression, mass arbitrary detention, forced labor, and high-tech surveillance against Uyghur and other minorities. The restrictions, first announced last month, cover sales of U.S. goods and some items made abroad with U.S. technology. Earlier, I spoke with Sean Rain, the founder and managing director of the China Market Research Group in Shanghai.
These economic sanctions are actually going to hit the American technology sector very hard. Companies like Intel and NVIDIA that sell to these Chinese firms like SenseTime, which is an artificial intelligence company, as well as telecom companies like Huawei, which is rolling out a 5G network globally. Whoever is going to control technology in the future is going to be able to rule the world. And that's why it's very clear that the United States is trying to sanction China's leading technology companies.
So there are many concerns among the international community that we are seeing the US and China engaged now in a new Cold War involving technology. Do you believe this to be the case?
Yeah, when it comes to mobile services technology, facial recognition, online payments, China is really 2 to 3 years ahead of the United States when it comes to innovation. So I actually think that the sanctions placed on these Chinese companies like SenseTime and Huawei by the United States is actually going to help, because what's happening is Chinese companies now are focused on only buying other products and services from the Chinese supply chain. So actually, I think that Trump is making it actually easier for President Xi in China to achieve its Made in China 2025 goals, where they're trying to support local innovation.
Is it possible that we could see more restrictions coming from the US side towards Chinese companies listed on American stock exchanges? This comes after the Secretary of State Mike Pompeo warned American investors on Thursday against fraudulent accounting practices.
Frankly, when we speak with CEOs of Chinese companies, they say they're very nervous about being caught up in a political storm in the United States and in scapegoating of China. So they just don't really see the desire that they used to have for going public in the United States.
Sean Rain, the founder and managing director of the China Market Research Group in Shanghai, thank you.
Thank you for having me as always.
Now, it's been another tough week for many of us. During normal times, Friday means meeting friends for a drink after work. Here in Britain, pubs play a key role in local communities. It's a place to drink, socialise and unwind. But pubs will be among the last to fully reopen for business in England, so they found another way to survive. The BBC's Paul Moss reports.
There was already quite a queue when I arrived at the Princess of Wales, a pub in the north of London. There's only a takeaway service on offer here. Because of the coronavirus lockdown, pubs in Britain aren't allowed to have customers drinking on the premises. But people were happy to wait in line just for the chance to get through the door of a pub, buy a drink and then leave.
I miss the pub a lot. Supporting your local business as well, and that's really important. I think there's a lot of beer in pubs at the moment that are going to be thrown away at the end of this.
It tastes so much better from the tap than it does in a can.
Well, I managed to get inside. I've got with me the manager here, Lawrence Santee. Lawrence, I've got to say, I'm surprised how many people would turn up to a pub just to get a takeaway.
It hasn't really shocked us. We've always been a very community-focused pub. So if it re-establishes what a pub's really about, the people who use it, the people who work in it, I think that's actually a positive.
Is it still financially worthwhile for you to open up for takeaways?
We are looking at it daily, and if it costs me the money we've made or saved over the years, well, that's the price.
A glass of overpriced white wine chilled at room temperature, please.
The second cheapest on the list.
That will be perfect.
There you go, my love.
The beer writer and comedian Ben McFarland has been making use of pub takeaways, bringing drinks home, but then trying there to recreate that typical pub atmosphere with the assistance of his wife, Sophie. He insisted to me that being able to get his hands on pub takeaway drinks has proved something of a lifeline in these difficult times.
What I do with my wife is we take turns to go to the fridge and get the beer as if we're buying rounds, and sometimes I surprise her by coming back with a packet of crisps in between my teeth. And then, of course, what we do at the end of the evening is we put the chairs on the table. I've bought a bell. At the end of the evening, we're going to bed, I ring the bell. My wife goes up to bed first, I close the door behind her and I say, just keep it down for the neighbours.
Time, gentlemen, please!
That report from the BBC's Paul Moss. Don't forget, you can download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher and marketplace.org. We'll be back at the same time, same place on Monday. In London, I'm Leisha Santarelli with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.